All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire football podcast, MWR.com. We are nearing, well, first off, Jeremy Moss, Matt Kennelly, that's our website. How you doing?
I can't complain.
Are we less than double-digit weeks till week zero?
I forget who tweeted it out, but I saw someone say that we are now 9 Saturdays away from week zero.
And remember, ESPN doesn't care about week zero, apparently, but we do.
But we do.
Just like last year and year before, which is weird because the past couple years, or maybe it's last year or the year before, there was like a half dozen games, I think. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I mean, they might care a little bit more this time around just because Miami and Florida are playing in week zero this time.
You would think. And I think they're airing that game, and it's also CFB 150 time. That's pretty cool. So that's always interesting. 150 years of college football. All right, so today's show, we're bantering a little because we're talking about the good old Green Chili to Mexico fight and Bob Davy Lobo, who's out in Albuquerque. Where to begin? What do you want to begin? The overhaul of the offense, new coordinators, the team getting kicked out of the conference? Sorry, that one's not happening. But everything seems to be going downward for the Lobos.
Maybe we should start with one of the questions that one of our followers on Twitter, RJ Montano, posed to us. Is Bob Davy New Mexico's biggest problem?
Yes. 100% yes. Well, I won't say 100%, but he's the main problem. He's at the top of the pyramid if we're going to go that route, if we're doing a visual medium here as we're talking about it.
Now, okay, so I thought for a long time about this. I sat on my couch and I really dug deep into what went wrong in Mexico last year. And the only reason I would disagree is because I think the biggest thing that went wrong for them specifically last year was injuries. You know, they had three different starting quarterbacks. They were only one of five teams in the country to have three quarterbacks start multiple games.
Nearly the quarterback.
You know, they lost, you know, at least two key pieces before the season even started, or by the end of September on defense in the front seven. You know, they had several other guys miss time throughout the year. And so those kinds of things add up when you don't have continuity. You know, it begins to affect you in ways that ultimately don't enable teams to win in the long run. But it was mostly problematic because, you know, that is one part of it. Some of it was just kind of general ineffectiveness by the guys there. You know, they were 0-2 in one score games last year, but the 9 games that they lost were by an average of over 22 points, and they were allowing 44 points per game to teams that finished at 500 or better. So every time you saw a Utah State or a Boise State or a Fresno State on the schedule, they just were not competitive in the same way that they might have been 2 years ago. And so when I'm thinking forward to 2019, you know, that is kind of the biggest question facing the Lobos, is what do they need to do to get back to just being competitive?
Here's what I would say. Like, I'll go back to my answer because mine is more of an off the cuff reaction. Which, if everybody heard me last year with Bob Davy, I am shocked he's still the head coach of any college football team, let alone the Lobos. But injuries are an issue of why they weren't the problems last year. But I still think it's Davy because why the heck do you look what they did the past couple years? They were a couple years removed from sharing the division title, going to a bowl game. What did they win a couple years? Was it 9-3 they went, I believe it was?
Yes, it was.
So since that year, they've been garbage. What's the difference? They moved, went away from their most best, the best asset they had, their run option attack, which was so unique. Nobody knew what was coming. It was so different. That was their catalyst or advantage, I would say, to be either compete or beat teams they had no business competing with. They get rid of Bob the Beast after one poor year. Now they're going to a more standard offense. It loses any advantage they had, and that's all on Bob Davy. That's why I'm saying it's mostly on him, because what he control, you can't control injuries. So players get hurt. Okay, his responsibility to build up depth to have your number two, number three play. But when you get rid of your offense, that's the best thing you have and the reason you're doing well. That's on him for not seeing what's going on. For some reason, wanting to go to a passing attack, which clearly is 3 years in the making and still hasn't shown much of anything.
Yeah, I mean, that pivot away from DeBessie after one bad year just hasn't worked out the way that I think he hoped. And
what was he thinking about doing it? Like, he had one bad year. Like, sorry to interrupt, but he had one bad year. They did the running backs themselves kind of took a step backwards, but why make a knee-jerk reaction after one poor season?
I'm not sure.
And that's
I think that the results kind of speak for themselves, because they finished what, 107th in offensive S&P Plus last year. And the early projection, the preseason projection, has them, I believe, even worse than that going into 2019.
Why? I still don't know why. It doesn't make sense. And then during the offseason, like, kind of continue with Bob Davey bumbling and fumbling, he demotes the defensive coordinator to promote some guy from within, which is weird in the first place. That guy leaves to go to, I think, LSU to take a lower position job. I think he's linebacker's coach who got demoted. Then they bring in the Liberty offensive coordinator who put up a ton of points. But again, it's freaking Liberty who, yeah, they crushed in Mexico last year, but they first year of FBS. And so what, I guess that's the best you can do?
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to what they did in 2016 when they won 9 games, you know, on offense especially, I'm trying to look it up on the fly, you know, they were 40th in S&P Plus.
That's pretty good.
And then the next year they were down in the triple digits. They fired DeBess, brought in Calvin McGee. That didn't work out.
Got rid of him quickly.
He left, I think.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Good. Smart movement.
and now they bring in Joe Daly.
From Liberty.
And that might be, you know, the one change, maybe more than all the others, both on the staff and on the field, that makes or breaks this season for the Lobos. Because, you know, I'm trying to remember the exact phrase that they have used to try to describe what they're trying to do on offense now. If I remember correctly, Davey called it a hybrid spread.
Sorry. I'm just exasperated over what he's trying to do or attempting to do for a defensive coach.
But I wanted to look into what that has meant, especially in the last couple of years for Daly at Liberty. So I went over to team rankings, and one thing I found was that last year they were actually pretty balanced on offense at Liberty. You know, they threw the ball 49% of the time, which was actually in the top 50 as far as the FBS is concerned. But the year before that, they threw it nearly 60% of the time, which I believe was their last year on the FCS level. So whether that jump in competition fostered that particular change, I'm not sure. Whether it was, you know, particular personnel that they had, you know, for instance, they did have a 1,000-yard receiver in Antonio Goldie Gandon, or Gandy Golden rather.
It's easy to mix up. It's okay.
and last year, Liberty was pretty decent at keeping the quarterback upright too. So they threw a lot and they protected pretty well. You know, they were 32nd in stuff rate, so they didn't really give up a lot of negative plays in the ground game. But it also wasn't a particularly good ground game either. They were 121st by S&P Plus rushing, even despite the fact that they had a 1,000-yard runner. So they weren't particularly efficient on the ground. They weren't really efficient through the air either. Their completion rate was a shade under 55%. So, I mean, I think if you're setting the bar there for what to expect from this Lobos offense, maybe they get there.
You better be able to limbo pretty low, because it's my bar is basically like a step over.
Maybe they get there. I don't know. But, I mean, maybe that's a good pivot toward talking about, you know, the personnel on the offense, and particularly a quarterback. Because one thing that I think is important to keep in mind is if you go back and you look at Bill Connolly's stat profiles, which, again, I always recommend everybody do.
Yes.
You know, he has a metric that he calls like percentile performance, which is basically how his five factors come together on a game-by-game basis. And one thing that jumped out to me was that three of New Mexico's four best games on offense came when Tavaka Tuioti was under center early in the year.
That makes a lot of sense.
And even just by the traditional numbers, he took a step forward from 2017 to 2018. You know, he had the best completion percentage of the three guys who saw significant time under center. He had 5 touchdowns against 2 interceptions. You know, his mobility enabled a sack rate that was significantly better than both Sherron Jones and Colton Gerhardt. And I think if he can stay healthy, which I think maybe the last couple of years have established that might be a bigger if than is comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But if he can do it, that is one of those steps in the right direction that I think is going to help this offense in the long run.
Well, it always is. If you're healthy, if you're not, like you mentioned, they played so many quarterbacks last year. It's hard to, even if they had that same offense we've enjoyed before, that success, there's a lot of timing going on with whatever quarterback's in there. And so even though it's that offense was mostly running, there's a lot of zone read, play action, or fake handoff pitches. It wouldn't matter if you had the best running back ever, but if the quarterback can't if it's new guy every handful of plays or every other game, you got to have a consistency. And Tuioka, I put him low. I keep struggling on my QB rankings. I did a while back. I put him above Josh Love. I'm not sure. He's near the bottom, but the fact stays. You mentioned when he's in there healthy, they're a better team, and he's clearly their best quarterback. And he can run a little bit. He seems to throw okay, like you mentioned, the amount of throwing they did. They're probably going to – I think they'll have even more throwing this year because I should pull up the roster really quick to check. They have like probably a bazillion wide receivers because they've been going JUCO route to add so many receivers the past couple years. They're going to want to throw more. And so it's going to be – if they're going to be successful and win a game or two more than we think, it does start with him being healthy. And being healthy means, hey, block for him and don't let him get hurt or get sacked, have a huge sack rate.
Yeah, and I mean, I think – you know, if it does devolve into the kind of situation that we typically see from, for instance, Air Force, where we've talked about in the past, you know, a team that runs the ball as much as Air Force does is going to need to have multiple quarterbacks probably ready to play and play well.
Yep.
If it devolves into that, then I think Sherron Jones becomes extremely important, especially if he can limit the turnovers, because that was one of the things that was perhaps the most significant difference between Tuioti and Jones was the fact that he had 12 interceptions in only 187 attempts. That's just not the kind of rate that's going to be able to get things done.
That's not the rate that started the junior varsity team. I don't know if they had one. But the experience is somewhat helpful in this case, I'll say.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I think that both guys bring to the table is that I think, you know, with when I think of a hybrid spread, you think of a quarterback who can move, you know, throw on the run, or at least just, you know, establish the pocket outside the hash tines. And if they have one thing in common, you know, both Jones and Tuioti were pretty good runners last year. Like Jones averaged a shade over 5.5 yards per carry, and Tuioti was right around 8. So if that's an element that they can carry over, I think that that'll work to the offense's advantage as a whole. But again, kind of a big if, because if they can't establish a consistent, you know, passing threat, then however good they are as runners may not matter as much.
Yeah, they got to do something where they can, especially if they're going to pass the ball. It's like they need to, we'll see this, because not to go back, we'll go back to Dave really quick. We're going to have our hot seat rankings. I kind of delayed putting those out, so they should be out probably soon. Did you actually fill those out? I forget. It's been a while.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. So I put a rating 0 to 4. 0 means you're sitting on a block of ice. 4 means you're the dog in the fire saying everything's fine when it's not really fine, essentially. Uh-huh. And I'm wondering where Dave will be because I haven't looked at the numbers. But when you're a coach who brings in a new offensive coordinator, a new defensive coordinator, compounded with the troubles that haven't even been addressed in 6 to 8 months about all the stuff we've had before with Davey covering up injuries, trying to help players cover up crimes, hide crimes, or just kind of change what's going on, which is a very, very bad look. And he's still the coach. Like, this is the year he has to stick around. And so hopefully injuries have a luck for him. But he's going to have this team play well to keep his job. And so I just wanted to bring that up before we kind of move too far away from it. But on offense, I think a big concern injuries. If they run the ball, if they pass the ball, that's fine. If it works, it's fine. But they need to have somebody run the ball. And it can't just be like Tuioti or Sherron Jones to be a quarterback whoever's out there. And they lose, let's just move running backs, they lose Tyron Owens and they lose a couple other guys. They don't have much of a great running team out there. Sherron Jones is their leading returning rusher, Matt.
They have options, but none of them are proven at this point.
Oh, you're being generous there. They do have bodies, as Dr. telling me. They have guys back there who are lined up with jersey numbers between 20 and 40.
Well, and maybe this is a good time to bring up one of the other questions that we had asked of us from one of our Boise writers, Colin. You know, does New Mexico have the correct personnel to pull off this non-triple option offense? I think it depends on who steps up a running back. Because, you know, they have options, like I said, but this is not me doubling down and saying that they're going to figure it out, because the options that they have, you know, none of them really stood out last year. You know, Amari Davis is going to be a senior. I'm assuming he's probably going to get the lion's share of the work, if not necessarily like a huge significant chunk. Mm-hmm. But he averaged only 3.5 yards per carry. And by highlight yards per opportunity, you know, which is basically just, you know, how many yards running backs are getting when they get to the second level. Mm-hmm. He was right at 3.7. You know, Davon Vigilant, who was one of the more highly touted recruits from a few years ago. He's a sophomore. He was in that same neighborhood. He averages a shade over 4 yards carry. You know, Bryson Carroll, former quarterback, is now a running back. You know, he averaged 3.5 yards per carry. So they've got like four guys who could reasonably spill in and contribute, but I think they're going to need at least one of those guys to take a step forward in production. And at least for right now, I don't know that I have any confidence in identifying who that's going to be.
There's a couple of guys. If you go to the bottom of like young guys, maybe it's one of these people, like they're recruiting. They have two decent recruits the past couple of years who've come in. Maybe it could be Lawrence Johnson, redshirt freshman, or Contrell Moore. He is one of their highest rated recruits running back. Didn't play last year. He's a true sophomore. Decent size, 5'9", 203. Maybe one of those two guys who they did a decent job recruiting in. But you're right, they have a amount of players. Maybe it's those two guys. I assume it's going to be Davis and Vigilant there at the top. But maybe Bryson Carroll. I don't know. But those younger guys at the bottom are going to have – they're going to get chances, I'll say that, to get in the rotation to be a starting or at least maybe a two or three type running back guy. I still think they need to run the ball a lot, but they've been missing, like, the past couple of years. Like, even Tarin Owens, we thought was pretty good. He kind of took a dip down. Could have been because the offensive changed, but maybe look for those young guys to step up. You're right. I just don't know who will be the guy because 184 yards, you're leading running back from last year. Or, excuse me, 185. Two guys tied at that amount. So, they need, and what would you say would be successful running back? Your leading rusher gets 800 yards. Would that be good for the Lobos, you think? Would that be acceptable?
I mean, I think, oh man, I guess I would have to think the benchmark.
Because last year, real quick, 687, Tarin Owens, he averaged less or fewer than 4 yards per carry, 3.69. That's unacceptable for any offense for a starting running back.
I think they need at least two guys to average maybe 4.5 yards per carry.
Okay. And what, 1,500 yards combined would be okay, you think?
I would think so. And okay. I mean, if you're thinking in terms of, like, for instance, success rate as a team, they were, you know, a little bit below the national average at 40.9%. But, you know, the running backs didn't really do any favors. Like, Owens was at 43% and Davis was at 39%, but there was nobody that really stood out. I guess it would just depend on, I don't know. I don't know if it would take that much to make the offense that much more improved. But again, it's just a matter of, I don't know who that guy is going to be.
All right, so let's go to receivers because that's kind of what they want to do, pass the ball. And I can barely fit the amount of receivers on one page here in the Google Doc I have in front of me on the screen. They lose Delaney Hart Johnson, who was really good last year, respectively for the amount of percentage of catches and everything came his way. But they have a lot of guys like Elijah Lilly, Ansamit Uma, Drowns back, Jay Griffin the fourth, lost slot guys there, tight end, maybe it's Marcus Williams. They have, similar to running back, they have a lot of options. And they go deep, like they've been bringing in receivers the past couple of years. I think this unit, quarterback's fine, I think, with starting what they have there. But receiving group, I think if this is going to be the year they're actually going to take a step and throw the ball well, you would think this would be it with the amount of guys returning. But five of their top six guys from last year, I guess four top five, and Q Drennan back from the year before. This might be the year they have the guys out there to do it.
Exactly. And to that point, you know, I think this is the inverse of the running game where if you go back to that question, do they have the personnel to make this work?
Yep.
At the receiver position, maybe.
Oh, maybe.
And I was doing some research. I just want to throw this out there because it surprised me. You know, as far as explosiveness is concerned, you know, New Mexico had 19 passing plays, of over 30 yards last year, and they threw the ball 288 times. That's a rate of 6.6%. That was the third best in the Mountain West behind only Fresno State and Air Force.
Interesting.
And I think when you go down the line and you look at the yards per catch that these returners had, you know, Elijah Lilly, 18 yards a catch. Ume had nearly 20 yards a catch. Q Drennan, and when he was in 2017 and had more playing time, he had over 20 yards a catch. So I think the downfield element is there. But it's all the underneath stuff that you need to make this offense work that is kind of the big question.
Yeah, to set it up, you got to have a running game to set up a passing game.
Yeah.
And protect the quarterback, give him time, all those type of things that are very important.
Because while I think that they set a very high bar for themselves as far as explosive plays in the passing game go last year, you know, just by, you know, passing S&P, if you look at marginal explosiveness, they were 12th nationally, even as they were in the triple digits in pretty much everything else regarding passing, which is kind of ironic. But, you know, the receivers, I think, have the particular skill. You can't teach speed, and they have a lot of it, especially in guys like Lilly and Griffin, who are also track stars at New Mexico. If those guys can bring the downfield element, you know, that is something that I think can be carried over, you know, if not necessarily to the same degree. They still have it in their arsenal. I think they do need maybe a little more from some, you know, between the hash marks production, and mm-hmm. maybe that's where a guy like Marcus Williams steps in, because he was pretty good last year, even with limited targets. He only had 19 targets, but he had 13 catches, 138 yards, 3 touchdowns, and a catch rate that was nearly 70%. So maybe he's the kind of guy, if he gets more targets, you know, and I want to shout out Frank Cagliano, because he put together like a lot of really useful information that I'm going to be using for this podcast.
Excellent.
Quarterbacks had a rating of 147.7 when they targeted him. That's pretty solid. And with, you know, a lot of little guys around him, you know, taking attention in different directions, maybe he is a guy who steps up and could be kind of a sneaky all-conference performer by the end of the year.
Let me put this question to you then. Running game's a question mark. Receiving game's fine. Quarterback seems to be okay. You seem to be, I don't know if you're just being rosy because we don't want to be downers on this team, but you seem to be a little bit excited for this Lobos offense.
Like I said, I think
cautiously optimistic.
If things break right, if they have better health than they did last year, especially, you know, the passing game has at least that one thing going for it, which I think we all maybe overlooked a little bit last year. And that is the kind of thing, with everybody coming back, that should carry over to some significant degree. So, yeah, I think that there is a case to be made for being cautiously optimistic.
All right. I think that could continue with the offensive line here. They do lose Aaron Jenkins, who is an all-conference player, 50 career starts. They also lose Charlie Grammel there, 19, 20 career starts. Their offensive line could be pretty good as well, I think, just from returning talent with the amount of starts they have coming back. They basically have three fifths, maybe four fifths, if you want to go to like Kyle Shapley, Jared Sylvester started a handful of games at left tackle there mm-hmm. last year. So that's a good start, too. Like I always say, hey, who cares if you played last year? It's great, but we'll see how the production really is. But it's never a bad thing to have all these guys playing. And then if you kind of look who's coming back, after that, that's where it gets an issue. They have no experience. He's going to never started a game ever after those four guys who had at least six starts last year with three and double digits. So I think there's a building block there, but they're going to need to find a left tackle, maybe a right guard as well, which a left guard. Guards, they're not to say they're interchangeable, Matt, but it's easier to find that than like a tackle. So I guess that's, if you're losing those two positions, it's an upswing for them to find a guy who might be like, oh, let's just say, see this guy on the roster, Ricky Atoge, 6'5", 354, or Rocky. Mm-hmm. He's a pretty big. Hold on. I have some news here. He actually may not be on the roster. I might be incorrect. Hold on. Continue. Oh, actually, sorry. He's not the roster. He committed to BYU. He was going to commit to New Mexico, so that's an error. So that giant behemoth will not be on the offensive line for the Lobos at all.
Well, and this brings up something that we haven't really talked about yet. New Mexico brought in a lot of JUCO guys mm-hmm. to try and jumpstart both sides of the ball. And so maybe JUCO guys are the link that really brings this together. Like David Savala, for instance, 6'4", 297. Maybe he's a guy who steps in on the mm-hmm. interior. You know, they do have Jared Sylvester coming back. He did get supplanted at left tackle last year by Chris Estrella. Yeah. For a time, but you know, he has some starting experience. He's still around.
He'll probably slide in there somewhere.
You know, Bo Hott, even if he doesn't have any starts under his belt, you know, he's got some game time under his belt. So it's not like they don't have options, but they really need some of those new arrivals, I think, especially on this offensive line, to really step up, whether that's someone like Jacob Jankowiak or Cade Briggs or whoever that happens to be. They have options, but it's kind of like the running game. Like, we just don't know who's going to step up. I think the big difference between this and the running game, some of the guys they have coming back may be a little better than a mm-hmm. lot of Mountain West fans think.
Like
per Football Focus, excuse me. Teton Saltz and Chris Estrella were both in the top five among Mountain West offensive linemen as far as pressures allowed.
So I was going to say, those two guys are going to be possible NFL radar guys this year.
Yeah, and so when I think of, you know, if Tuioti can stay healthy, if the running game can do a little something, and if they can find a little more efficiency in the passing game, I think that the offensive line is good enough to be decent, if not necessarily elite, in the same way that we might think of like a Boise or something like that.
Wait, you think this line could be that good?
I'm not saying it could be like a top four, but I think that it's good enough to be like at least a middle of the pack defense. You know, they were well above average as far as pass blocking last year. You know, by Pro Football Focus, if I remember correctly, they were the fourth best in the conference. You know, Utah State was kind of up there above everybody else, but I think they were right behind Fresno, and I don't have the tweet in front of me. There was someone else up there, but they were pretty good at protecting against the pass last year. A lot of the problem came down to quarterbacks holding the ball too long or just kind of making mistakes, throwing it down the field or something like that.
Okay, so let's go to the defense, which for me has always been, come on, Lobos, get together. Their offense has always been better. Defense, oh boy. Looking at what they did last year, like yards per play, 6.5 yards just about. They gave up a lot of points last year. You mentioned the blowouts, and even some when they played teams above 500, they weren't competitive all that much. So they do have some pieces back on defense, at least in that front four, defense 3-4, I guess they're what, the 3-4 defense they run. Aaron Blackwell is really good. Nose tackle. He'll be probably what do you think he'll probably be their best defender this year?
I think he's definitely in that conversation, yeah.
He's really good. Was he an all-conference guy last year? I should look that up.
He was an honorable mention.
Okay, so that's good for Lowe. But that's basically all-conference if you're coming from New Mexico. I'm sorry. But they only lose Cody Baker. What they have to do, it's like you give him 6 yards a carry. It's like you got to – or not a carry, a play. You got to make pressure. You got to do something because they – looking at overall what they did, they have these guys back, but they weren't getting the quarterback. They weren't getting pressured. Yeah, a couple of guys, like they had no guy really stand out for like sacks or TFLs. They had guys get between one to three sacks, maybe up to four TFLs. They had a bunch of guys getting back there, but there was not one guy doing really, really good things. Mm-hmm. And they need, I think, not that they need a standout player, but they need to improve that production just a little bit. If it's all the same, it's fine. Here's the thing. If you have five guys, you get five TFLs, that's fine. Bring it up a little bit more. Because if you can't dominate one guy, like somebody who gets 20 TFLs or something amazing, they're spending a lot of guys on him, that's fine. But if you have five guys and they can't focus on one guy, that can be a benefit as well, even if all these guys are just slightly above average football players for New Mexico. That could even be better than having one great guy where they're all focusing on him and everybody else do something. And so that's kind of spread out of the talent-wise, if that makes sense. They just needed to uptick a little bit better across the board, I think. That's fine for me. If they all have, like, if they have eight guys, eight sacks each, that's fine. That's great. Or TFLs, that's perfectly fine. Then one guy with absurd numbers.
I think if they have eight guys with eight sacks, that might be a record.
I bet TFLs or something. That's still pretty good. But you get my point, though.
But to that point, and just to expand upon that, I think one of the most telling differences in how the defense performed last year is they had a they had an okay pass rush. You know, their defensive sack rate was a shade under 6%, 77th nationally. You know, not good, but not poor. But their defensive stuff rate, which is just basically the percentage of plays stopped at or behind the line of scrimmage, was only 14.1%. And that was 126th in the country. And when you look back, especially later in the year, when they were starting to get mauled on the ground, you know, they were getting pushed over by teams like Wyoming, by Air Force, by San Diego State, you know, Utah State, all teams that have very strong ground games. And I think the big thing is they're counting upon, you know, guys who either haven't seen a lot of playing time because of injury or guys who have been role players in the past taking on bigger roles. Perfect example of the former is someone like Trent Sellers. Came in with a fair bit of hype in 2016. He was a transfer from Georgia Tech, but he didn't play at all last year because he was injured in fall camp. You know, perfect example of the latter is someone like, I'm trying to remember how to pronounce his name.
You got it.
Hold on. I got this.
Get the pronunciation guide out.
And now, Adebayo Soramekun.
Perfect.
you know, some or even someone like Aaron Austin, you know, those guys you're talking about who they didn't, I mean, in spare playing time, you know, they had, you know, 3.5 tackles for loss, you know, 5.5 tackles for loss. Someone like Najee Flowers didn't see a lot of starts, but actually did play a few more snaps than Blackwell did along the defensive line. He had 5.5 tackles for loss. I think, like the offensive line, the defensive line should be a little bit better than they were last year, especially toward the end of last year. And even behind them at linebacker, you know, they're getting a guy back like Alex Hart, who, you know, even if he isn't an all-conference performer, he was still pretty solid in the middle 2 years ago. 5.5 tackles for loss, had a sack, and one was one of the team's leading tacklers that year. A
couple pass breakups, too. Gets hands up. So he is doing making plays everywhere, it seemed like.
So, you know, keeping him healthy, keeping guys on the front healthy is another one of those little things where, you know, if they can keep it together, that could be a relative strength of theirs, is just defending the run a little bit better than they did last year.
You know, it's not going to be a strength, that secondary.
That's tough.
1, 2, I'm counting here. Yes, I'm counting, folks. 3, 4, 5, 6, or top six players are gone from last year.
Top six tacklers.
Tackler, sorry. Players.
Maybe
tacklers.
Just to put this into perspective, this was another eye popping stat that Mercogliano was able to gather. Between the cornerbacks and the safeties they're having to replace, they're replacing over, or not over, about 3,700 snaps.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Also, 29 pass breakups and what, 7 interceptions as well, I believe, between those guys.
Mm-hmm.
So they have guys who played beyond that, so it's not like completely nothing. Like Dejon Rodgers, Patrick Reed, Cameron Miller, nickel guy Miller there, Willie Hobby, we've all played some games. But it's just so much production. Somebody's going to have to, like, they have as many defensive backs as wide receivers on this team. Maybe even more. Which, like, maybe like Eric Cuffey, who's a pretty highly rated guy out of high school. He's a junior now. Maybe one of these guys, who JUCO guys you mentioned, always bringing in. They're all, one good thing I will say, not to be all kind of down, all these guys are upperclassmen who played last year. So they have guys who have practice experience and game experience. Maybe all it was, they just need to, they'll move into a few more games. Like these guys, three of them played almost the whole season last year. And so they have game experience and they're upperclassmen. The guys who didn't play are upperclassmen as well. So maybe it's just their time to get the play, you know what I mean, just to actually see the field. After being around the program for a couple of years, they can finally play, because when you have six seniors ahead of you, there's not much playing time when it's secondary.
I mean, I think in order to justify bringing in so many JUCO guys, they need at least one or two of those guys to break into the starting lineup.
Exactly. They'd have to.
And to me, I look at a guy like Eric Cuffey, who, at least as far as 24/7 Sports is concerned, was one of the better guys that they brought in as a defensive back this past winter. You know, someone like him, someone like Jarek Reed, who comes in as a sophomore. So there is some room for this defense to grow together.
For sure.
But, I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see the mix of guys who have been here kind of and have some familiarity with the system that Peterson is implementing. Jordan Peterson, the defensive coordinator, I should clarify. And the new guys that they're bringing in. Because I think I don't know that it's enough to say that one or the other needs to have the upper hand, but they just need to have some guys from both camps step up and be productive. That's really what it comes down to.
And I think this is probably the most extreme example of, like, your running back, where, hey, who's going to step up? TBD, we'll see. They have a bunch of bodies back there. This is literally no clue. Well, sorry, I shouldn't say no clue. Well, no, we'll say we have no clue is going to be good. Starting lineups, mostly said, they have guys too deep and all that stuff. They're kind of keeping close to the vest, but we literally don't know who's going to be like the standout guy at this position.
Yeah.
Or positions, I should say. And that means when they're playing teams like, even like, we'll get their schedule shortly, but when they play like, they play Notre Dame in week three, I believe. They're going to get crushed because, yeah, they have a new quarterback there in South Bend, but they're not going to keep up. They're just going to pass the ball. It's like, that's what I expect teams to do when we talk about teams to attack the Lobos, which running the ball probably should be not very difficult, I would say. But passing might be the best way to get up on them early and just take advantage of the, not just losing talent, but some of these players who will get to start in lineup probably have never played an FBS game in their life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big concern. And that's probably the biggest concern area for this whole team, I would say.
on the bright side.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Let's turn around. Give us the bright side, Matt. What do we got here?
The bright side is New Mexico might have awesome special teams again.
Okay. How is that? Who's good on this in this area?
Pretty much everybody. Yeah, Elijah Lilly, you know, we don't really talk about him in the same way that we've talked about like Rashad Penny and Juwan Washington in the past. But, you know, he was a pretty good kick returner last year. And he's, I think, has one or two touchdowns in his past, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, nothing last year, at least, but he did well. No Savon Scarver back there.
Yeah. You know, obviously losing Marcus Hayes is going to hurt. They're going to need someone to replace him at, you know, returning punts.
Yeah.
But maybe whether it's Lilly, Griffin, I think that they have options that should be pretty good, even if they aren't quite as productive as Hayes was. And Andrew Shelley, you know, even though he missed 5 points last year, he only missed, five extra points. He only missed one field goal in 9 tries, and he was a perfect 3 for 3 from over 40. So I think it's reasonable to expect him to take a step forward. And Tyson Dyer might get lost a little bit in the shuffle because all of a sudden the Mountain West has a lot of really good punters.
Yep.
But I mean, don't forget that 83 yard punt that he had last year.
Oh, that's right. Who was that against again? I remember the kick.
Man, I don't remember that off the top of my head.
All right, well, do it again so we can remember it this time.
But I mean, that was a record, and he had a net average of 40 yards period, which is really good. If I remember correctly, that's even better than Brian Stonehouse, who was the first team All Mountain West selection. So I mean, even if they aren't top 4 or top 5 like they were by special teams S&P Plus last year, I would feel pretty confident in saying that they'll get close to that again. And, you know, that's one of those things where, you know, if the offense scuffles or if the defense can make a stop here and there, all of a sudden special teams can become very important, and that could become the difference between winning or losing a couple games this year.
It could be. If they're that good kicking the ball, they have it. Because you can – because say offense is just okay this year, which is possibility might just be okay. They get stuck at the 20 to 30-yard line. Okay, good chance to make the field goal, flip it to field a bit on punting for – like you mentioned, he has one of the 40-yard net average, a good return game. This could be a way where they could sneak out maybe, what, 8 to 10 more points a game, whether it be an extra touchdown or a field goal combo or something, where that could keep them around against teams that are more on their level.
Exactly.
All right, let's take a quick timeout and then schedule time. All right, I have my schedule filled out before the show, so you can pat me on the back if you'd like or just say, that's your job, you should have done it anyways before.
It's okay. I'm proud of you.
Oh, thank you so much. All right. And we'll put these out later once we get closer to season so people remember. So they take on Sam Houston State, which is so ironic just because, you know, the old OC they took from there a couple years ago. Their schedule, non-conference schedule, Sam Houston State at Notre Dame, New Mexico State at Liberty. Not too bad. Notre Dame's not going to be a win, but they're like looking at their win probability. It's not like a good Lobos.
It's maybe a little lower than you would like for some of these opponents.
You tell me you wanted to be low 2% too for Notre Dame is not right, or is that too low?
Yeah, no. But I mean, and maybe this is a good time to bring up another question that Colin posed to us: is what's the best route for New Mexico to become bowl eligible? Win a non-conference.
I will say, get back to me 2021.
But I mean, if they're going to try and do it this year, they have to win a non-conference play.
You're right. Like non-conference plays, they could go. The only game is lost to Notre Dame, in my opinion, definite. Everything else, possibility. They like when you get the league play really quick. They do have to go to San Jose State. That's still a winnable game. The FCSU is a toss-up, so they'd have to find 3 conference games, which we'll get to. But I don't know if they'll be able to find that. But you're right; they'd have to win 3 or 4 in non-league play to have any sort of chance, which would start with Sam Houston State, which I'm not going to lie, that could be a loss, but they're probably going to win.
I mean, the Bearcats had a down year last year. They were only 6-5, and they're already being talked of, I think, as a team that could rebound to make the FCS playoffs again. But, and this might be maybe the best FCS team that New Mexico's faced in a few years, but I would be shocked if they dropped this game.
Yeah, I would be too. I think it'll be close. Just because of same used to say they've always been past couple. That's why they brought in DeBesky a couple years ago. They were going to FCS title games, like I think a couple in a row. And so they brought him in to do that. They're still reasonably close to that level almost outside of last year. So I'm just going to say a win, but don't be shocked. I wouldn't be like, don't be overly surprised if you see the bottom line upset alert in New Mexico versus Sam Houston State on August 31st.
Yeah.
So they got that one as a victory. They go to Notre Dame. Bob Davies, old, whatever he coached there, seems like 10-plus years ago, 15 years ago maybe at this point. I'm asking this, Matt. Let's have some fun. Is Notre Dame a playoff team for you this year?
No.
No. Are they going to go to the Orange Bowl or something this year? I mean, are they that level of caliber of a team?
I mean, have you seen their schedule?
I should look it up. I hit it again to Mexico. I know that.
Their schedule is okay. So I'm just going to rattle this off for you real quick. At Louisville, home versus New Mexico. Mm-hmm. At Georgia, they're not going to beat Georgia.
No.
Home versus Virginia. Home versus Bowling Green. Home versus USC. At Michigan, they're not beating Michigan.
No.
Home versus Virginia Tech. Mm. At Duke.
Okay.
Home versus Navy. Home versus Boston College. At Stanford.
Decent schedule.
I really hope they go 8-4 and I don't have to hear about them this
That's
year.
What I'm thinking. Like, there's a bunch of toss-up games there. And half those games you probably mentioned at home are probably neutral site games, like the Navy one or wherever, maybe. Like Virginia, we'll see. They're okay. Virginia Tech, there's a bunch of toss-up games. But, like, USC, who knows? But there's a couple, like, two guarantees. Who'd you mention they have probably losses? Michigan, and who's the other one?
Georgia.
Georgia, yeah. Georgia. Those two losses, so... Lose one more and then you're out. But it's easier than last year, but it's not like easy. You know what I mean? It's a fine schedule for them.
Here's a fun fact for you.
Ooh, what do you got?
All time, Notre Dame is 30-6 against the Mountain West.
Can I think of the six losses?
Yes.
Oh boy, six losses. Who they played? They didn't play them well. I think is BYU on that list at all? Do you know?
No, it is not.
Okay, they played them after Independence. Oh, bowl games? No. Jeez, I don't know if I can think of the six losses. Can you give me a year at all for any of those losses? Do you have that in front of you?
I don't have that in front of me, but I can tell you. It's an answer that's simpler than you think it is.
Boise State.
No, actually.
UNLV.
The only Mountain West team that has ever
beat
Notre Dame.
That team has six wins versus Notre Dame?
Yes.
Wyoming.
No, it's Air Force.
Okay, that makes okay. Yeah, it makes sense to play them a tad more. Okay.
Air Force has six wins against Notre Dame. They're the only Mountain West team to ever beat the Irish.
That's a good fact. I bet I can name one of those wins. 1985.
That sounds about right, yeah.
Because that's the year they could have won the national title, and the WAC could have had back-to-back national titles in BYU and Air Force and changed college football forever.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying. I've looked at them like, that would have been awesome. But... interesting. All Air Force. Okay, that's a pretty good fact there. But back to the subject, New Mexico not going to get number 7.
No,
not even close. Even with the new quarterback and the whatever happened to playoff last year. No. All right, then we go to Mexico State. This is one of the winnable games they have. It's at home this time around. These games have always been pretty exciting the past couple of years. I remember that, 2 years ago? New Mexico had that huge comeback where they had to score what they ended up losing by a touchdown, scored by, I think, 3 fourth-quarter touchdowns or second-half touchdowns to come back.
Mm-hmm.
They are favored by about 5 points at this time of the year. New Mexico State was pretty much a downturn last year. Remember when we talked about the Wyoming game? People thought New Mexico State has all these NFL-caliber defenders. Not so much. When you play Wyoming...
No.
That did not happen. They're saying that could be the case, but negative.
I saw a headline not too long ago where Doug Martin, the head coach of the Aggies, had claimed that this year's Aggies team was better than the team that went to the Arizona Bowl a couple of years ago.
You mean the team that ranked 127th according to Athlon out of 130?
I'm not sure I see it. I mean, to their credit, they do have a lot coming back on pretty much both sides of the ball. Like, they do lose some key defenders, but, you know, they've got... You know, Roy Lopez and Cedric Wilcott's coming back on their defensive line. Those guys combined for 22 tackles for loss last year. You know, they have Javon Ferguson coming back at linebacker, and they have most of their secondary back, but
they gave up 41 points a game last year, Matt. Come on.
Yeah, they couldn't stop turning the ball over against New Mexico last year.
Yeah, they do have Josh Adkins back, quarterback, so maybe that's something, but I would say this is going to be a toss-up game, be pretty exciting, but I'll go with the home team. I'll go with the Lobos.
Yeah, I've got this one as a New Mexico win as well.
Close. It's one of their wins on the year, I'll say. Then they go to Liberty, which will be their off going taking on the hey, I guess good for you, Hugh Freeze. Whatever, getting a job over there.
Yeah.
Sidetrack, did you read what Cam did at Mid-Major Madness about Liberty during college basketball season?
He's not wrong
completely. We don't get to it. Go look it up, but the people who were defending what Falwell and Falwell Jr. are doing and what they do on campus, it's like, Go away, please. But they're FBS, so I guess we sort of got to talk about them for a hot second. They have a new OC. They have a new head coach. They have new everything. Is there any intel that New Mexico can learn from pulling over their OC to come to town to Albuquerque?
Well, I mean, I think I would be very shocked if they gave up 52 points again.
Yeah, we'll see. TBD for me. No, you're probably right.
Liberty does have a lot coming back, especially on offense. You know, they have their quarterback, Stephen Calvert, who, you know, maybe a little bit explosive, not necessarily efficient, like we talked about earlier. You know, they have their 1,000-yard rusher, Frankie Hickson, coming back, and they have Peyton Pickett behind him at running back. But again, not terribly efficient. And they do have Antonio Gandy-Golden coming back. He was a 1,000-yard receiver. New Mexico couldn't really stop him at all in last year's matchup. So if they have a little more luck this time around, that should make a huge difference. But, you know, let's not forget that Liberty did not have a very good defense last year. So while they do, I think, have 6 or 7 returning starters, by defensive S&P Plus, they were 122nd last year. And it was one of those instances where when you go back and look at games that New Mexico should have won, Bill Connolly pegged it as an 80% chance post-game win expectancy for New Mexico.
I remember that. That's so surprising.
And a lot of that came down to turnovers.
I think part of it too, real quick, you mentioned that receiver. If the Lobos have a brand new starting group, he could go off again, and that could be, you know, I mean, like kind of a counterattack, the turnover thing. If he, so it's on the road. Where is Liberty? It's out in Virginia, correct? On that part.
Lynchburg, Virginia.
Oh, good old Lynchburg. I don't know, because last year was such a blowout. The same result last year is probably not going to happen, whether it be points or turnover wise. That's not the case. But, oh man, this. What is it, 62% win probability? 41%.
Yeah.
41, that's New Mexico State. 41%. I got to go loss for Net Lobos. I'm sorry.
I think they can beat Liberty.
I think they can too, but will they? That's the thing. I don't think they will.
I mean, I think if the offense can get it together, we saw flashes of what they could do last year, and I think Liberty is the kind of team, especially on defense, where New Mexico can beat them up a little bit and kind of pull and maybe win a shootout.
Actually,
like last year's matchup.
I'll go win because they got a new head coach there, so I'll go win. So you're 3-1, Lobos. You are halfway to bowl eligibility. Enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah, because then we get into conference play. And
if you heard our New Mexico or San Jose State preview, I have this a big fat L for the Lobos.
As do I.
Because yeah. I guess the difference for me real quick is quarterback play is much better for San Jose State, and they have more playmakers, I would say.
See, I mean, at this point, you know, and maybe I should have said this at the onset, New Mexico backslid hard enough where it's like they're kind of in the same position that a team like San Jose State is in now.
Yeah.
Where, you know, now they're facing an uphill climb at a time when the rest of the conference is not only wide open, but a lot of teams at the top are getting better.
Yeah. That's true. Like, that's the kind of thing we mentioned with San Jose State, like we mentioned before. They're getting better, but so is the league. So they may be a better team, but they still may not have the wins to show for it or production. Well, I guess production, but the wins may not be there.
Yeah.
So, like, league play, like, we're going to blast these really quick because we're both not predicting a ton of wins in league play. Going the rest of the way, they are not favored in any conference game at all. Their closest game is a toss-up at home versus CSU.
Which literally 50-50.
Yeah, which I'm surprised it's a toss-up. So I'll just say it now. They're not winning the game in Mountain West play this year.
I think if they're going to do it, they're going to have to beat CSU at home. And, you know, to echo my point earlier about win in non-conference play, you know, if they want to get back to a bowl, they're going to have to win home games. Because in the last decade, the only two times that they went to a bowl, which was 2015-2016, they were the only two seasons that they were better than 500 at home. So if they're going to do it, they're going to have to hold serve against teams like Colorado State and Hawaii.
No, Hawaii is too much better for them now. I don't think they can do anything close to versus Hawaii.
But, you know, I think that Colorado State's kind of the perfect litmus test for where both of those teams are going to be standing by that point. And even if bowl eligibility isn't at stake there, I think that that's the kind of game where maybe Davies' job security is at stake if they don't beat the Rams.
I will say, I will be very confident saying this. If they don't go to a bowl game, Bob Davies fired. Why should he stay around? Especially if they go 3-1 and lose, go 0-8 in league play. Why would you keep that guy around? There's a million reasons he should already be fired and not be on campus. I know if it's a money thing, it's a lame excuse, but it's there if they keep him around just because of that. But there's no reason he should be the coach at even going into 2019.
So you're saying that they're not going to beat Colorado State?
No. I told you, they're going 0-8 in conference play.
All right.
Do you have any wins on there?
I think there's a couple of things worth bearing in mind. One of them, which kind of surprised me considering the last couple of years, the Lobos have lost 9 straight to Colorado State.
Okay, make it 10.
And, I mean, especially I think that they're due because they lost on a last-second field goal in Fort Collins last year, and then they only lost by 3 the year before that. But, yeah, I don't know.
It's like they're easy games on the road. Like at San Jose State, that could be a win. I'm not saying it's not going to win. They can't win. It's just a road game. Makes it a little bit trickier. Going to Nevada, who we'll see how they are. That's, I guess, comparative to other teams on schedule. Not as tough as like Air Force, Boise, Utah State. They go to Wyoming. Again, that's tough because their defense, and it's a road game for an easier team on the schedule. They get all these tough home these teams at home. Hawaii's going to be good on the road. Air Force, Utah State. The schedule doesn't – not that – need to do them any favors, but the teams they could beat are all on the road, essentially, except for CSU.
Yeah, that's the thing. Win early in non-conference play, but that's a big if.
I honestly would not be surprised if they lose to New Mexico State and Liberty. Possible.
The possibility is there.
Yeah, that's my point. I'm not saying it will, but we talk about other teams like, oh, can they win 10 games, go undefeated in a vacuum, look at game by game. Like, talent-wise, they're better than 2 teams, maybe 3. I guess those 3 wins I have. Like, if you go through the talent overall, no roster on this. Maybe San Jose State's close, but Josh Love is a pretty good quarterback. Tyler Nevins can run the ball well. They have a receiver out there that's pretty good on their team. Talent wise, they're the least talented team in Mountain West, I'll say, and I'm pretty confident in putting that out there.
They could be improved, and still lose games by like 10 points on average rather than 22.
I guess you got to start somewhere.
And maybe that's maybe I should just come out and say it too. I don't have them winning any conference games either.
Good, thank you. I'm afraid you're gonna say like they got 3 wins now. They're going through the Cure Bowl again or something somehow.
But I think maybe this is an opportunity to talk about the range of possibilities. Like yes. you mentioned that you could see them losing to New Mexico State and Liberty, mm-hmm. and I think that if things fail to come together, they absolutely could.
Like best case, like if we're gonna be super optimistic, best case scenario. 3-1 conference play. That's reasonable and best case, obviously. Outside not being Notre Dame, no way. They could beat San Jose State for 4. They could beat CSU for 5. If I'm looking for one more game to get to 6, I'm guessing only Hawaii because it's at home and they're not great traveling. And if they have a bad second half like last year, who knows?
But here's another fun fact for you. New Mexico has also won 7 in a row against Hawaii.
When's Austin to play? 3 years ago?
In 2016.
So Hawaii was garbage.
They won on the islands 28-21. Is that Norm? And the year before that, they won at home by a point in 2015.
Those are no Norm Chow years. They don't really count, do they?
Like I said, this streak goes back to 1993, so yeah. Make of it what you will.
Past couple. So what's your – like, that's how – if they're going to get to 6, that's like me stretching a lot. But even Hawaii – the reason because it's a road game for the Warriors and their second half last year was subpar. What's like your range or best case scenario for them? Like, okay, my range is 1-6 wins, but I'm not confident getting to 6 at all. I'm just saying there's a possibility for fairly reasonable scenarios where they could get that.
They're going to have to steal those early wins on the road. San Jose State, Liberty, Wyoming.
Ooh, Wyoming.
I mean, I think that the case for winning against Wyoming more or less comes down to if the offense sputters like it did a lot last year.
Okay.
You know, by the end of last year, Wyoming's offense was firing on all cylinders, which is why you saw
on the run
was getting thumped at the end of the year.
On the ground game, they were, I'll say. I'll have to add that caveat. Yeah. Passing.
But I think that, and we'll talk about the Cowboys more at length when we get to their podcast, but just generally speaking, that's the scenario I see where if things come together in this you know, what Davey called the no-name defense can hold its own and not necessarily be an elite defense, but to be like at least an average defense in the conference. And if Tuioti can stay healthy and if the running game could take at least a little bit of a step forward. You know, that is the difference between like maybe one win, three wins, and six wins.
So you think six is a possible range, 1-6?
Yeah, I have them at 3-9, 0-8 in conference.
Oh boy.
But I think that there's a possibility there, and it may not be a necessarily huge possibility. I'd maybe put it at 5-10%
for six wins.
For six wins.
Whew, I gotta go single digits on that. I can't do more than 10%.
But I think it mostly comes down to them finding their ceiling and coming together sooner than the other teams were in those same positions as them. You know, the San Jose States, the Colorado States, and to a lesser extent, the Wyomings.
So
of the conference.
If they go 3-9, is Bob Davie fired?
It's really hard to say.
Why are you still?
If it were my decision, I would probably fire him. But just trying to wrap my head around how the administration has dealt with this regime in the last couple of years, it's really hard for me to say that it's going to be a definitive yes.
Well, you and Dana Lebed, who are not, nobody's too happy with what's going on because they're stonewalling. Like, let's delete emails because we can't. Like, you can't do that. Oh man.
But okay, so yeah. here's another question then, which was brought up by Raja, another of our Boise State writers. If Davie gets fired, what is his next job?
Oh, short order cook, serving green chili in Las Cruces.
No, the obvious answer is analyst.
Alabama analyst.
he goes to an SEC team and becomes a defensive analyst.
And then he'll soon be the head coach at
probably some FCS team somewhere.
Furman, DC or Furman, head coach of Furman?
No, Furman's better than you think.
That's the first name I could think of out there.
Speaking of Furman, maybe that comes down to our last question. You know, if the worst comes to pass and New Mexico has a very forgettable season and Davie gets fired, and going back to RJ Montano, his last question was who would take the job after another season of poor performance and attendance? And so I had to think about this for a little bit.
I think it's too early to tell, but what are you spitballing right now here in June?
I mean, I think it comes down to either some kind of up-and-coming FCS
coach. Oh, I got the coach. Go with it. I got the coach in mind right now. Okay. No, you go with your own. I want you to finish your thought out. I have the best coach ever for New Mexico.
I mean, I think that there are two schools of thought. And there was an article from the Santa Fe New Mexican written by Will Weber, which was really helpful in this regard. I think you might be able to lure a fairly well-regarded coordinator of some kind, whether it's Danny Gonzalez or, you know, at Arizona State, former San Diego State defensive coordinator, mm-hmm. or Zach Arnett, their current defensive coordinator. Both of those guys happen to have New Mexico Lobos ties. You know, maybe someone like Mark Sanford Jr., who, if he can rehabilitate himself as Utah State's offensive coordinator, maybe he could get back into the game as a head coach.
Okay.
Or if you dip into the FCS level, I think maybe you could draw kind of an up-and-coming coach there, you know, in the same way that we've seen in years past from, like, you know, Eastern Michigan or something like that. And so, you know, maybe guys like Troy Taylor at Sacramento State, who I wrote about recently. He's got a history of...
That's not... I'll tell you right now, that's not happening.
I think I know who you're thinking of, but I just want to throw a few names just as... there's no basis in this. This is just me speculating.
I want you to guess, too, who it is, what you're done here, if you think I know who
you know, it is. Eric Morris, who is a guy who has Texas ties. He's at Incarnate Word right now. Or, like I said, mentioning Furman, Clay Hendricks, former Air Force staff member under Troy Calhoun. You know, he has ties to that area, too. But I will cede to you because I had one more name, but I really want to know who you're thinking of.
I want you to guess. Who do you think it is?
Dan Hawkins.
No.
No?
That's a good guess. I'll give you a clue. They were in the Mountain West last year as a coordinator.
It's not Bob DeBessie, is it?
No. David Yost.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Bring him in from Texas Tech. Have a great year under Matt Wells. He's weird enough to run a wild offense. Why not?
Why not, indeed?
I'm just saying, that's who I would. That's a guy who would. All your names were great, I think, there as well. I just thought of it off the top of my head. He's kind of in the area. Not that he'd recruit the area, but... He goes from Logan, okay. You go to Lubbock. Oh, geez, what's up there? Albuquerque probably looks just like Lubbock, but maybe a tad nicer because it got some mountains out there in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. So I think, and then look what Utah State, like, being around a coordinator, he's gonna get a head coaching job soon as well if Texas Tech does well. But I think that I'd like that name to be possible. I also like your Stanford thing as well. Not Boise, sorry, it was previously, but Utah State. could be a good guy. Real quick with Davey's contract, he has a deal through 2021, so expires 12/31/2021. So that's what, three more seasons.
Yeah.
His current pay, he gets about $820 per year. He gets a car for a bonus. That's pretty cool, right? He gets.
I mean, it's kind of nice.
Athletic bonuses, really quick. $10,000 for conference coach of the year. Never gonna happen. $25,000 for national coach of the year. Oh, dream on, buddy. $25,000 for a top 25 final ranking. $10,000 for a top 25 ranking anytime during the year. Trying to see what else he gets. A couple bonuses this year. Okay. Buyout of coach leaves for another job. Not gonna happen. These are numbers are slightly dated, but my point is he's still in the contract for three more seasons. What would it take? Like, if seriously, for me, if he's going to get fired this year, which he should, he may finish the year out. But if he doesn't, it would probably the thing that would do it probably losing like a blowout to some like Nevada or something like on the road. I don't know. I just think if they go 3-9, they're done. If he goes 0-8, league play, he's done. Getting thrashed by Boise State on the road or Air Force at home could be the final thing to get it done. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if they have the money because there's I don't know the latest update of them cutting sports and I know ski team, soccer, men's soccer team, all sorts of things going on because there are issues with money with that trip to Scott, the Scottish golfing trip for donors or whatever it was that came out to be the former AD. Maybe it's a money thing, they have to keep him, but at some point with his, like you mentioned, backslide dipping, like that 1 year where they won 9 games, they've won what, 6 since in total the 2 years after, is that right? Mm-hmm. Something like that. So I'm going to say he's gone after this year. During the season, I'll put like 70%. I'll say toss up, he's gone mid-season at some point. But I say he has to be gone if they go 3-9. Has to be.
Well, I guess we'll have to see how everything shakes out.
So you're still maybe? You're not confident in it?
It's really hard for me to say.
Just because of their circumstances in town?
Yeah.
It's hard for me to say, too. That's why I'm not so sure mid-season. But my prediction, 3-9. Your prediction, also 3-9.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the last place. If you follow in closely to this podcast, in other words, you'll kind of know our order of finish, essentially. If you kind of go back, we've done Utah State, San Jose State, Air Force, Nevada. Next week, we're going to go to the West Division, I believe, to kind of keep it balanced. So we could do Hawaii. We could do San Diego State. We could do Fresno State. We could do UNLV. So 4 options out the West. We'll do a show next week. So, well, I shouldn't say next week, Matt, because who knows when you're listening to this.
That's true.
This will be our last show in June, I guess, the next one we do, because that's when it's out. But just listen, check out, we're rolling out all our previews, out-of-conference previews, position previews are coming out slowly as well. Top 50 countdown will be out, 2 weeks, I believe? We're starting first week of July, Matt, is that correct?
Yeah.
Top 50 all-time countdown is getting there. I need to get my butt in gear and work on the all-time teams left of the conference for 20 years of football. I've been slacking on that, but ton of content, a bunch of new writers joining as well, a couple Utah State guys, at-large basketball guys, so we've got some hoops content, we have that. And I guess we'll be back next week. Any last words we need to add to the Lobos podcast, Matt?
I think we are all set.
We are good. Check us out, MWIR.com, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Podcoin, put the code Mountain West. I've earned enough, Matt, to get like a $10 gift card to Google Play. That's pretty cool. So
not bad at all.
Get some cash to just listen to this podcast and others, and we'll be back next time, and hey, leave us a review on iTunes. I can't say iTunes, Matt. It's Apple Podcasts now, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true, huh?
I don't use
it. I don't know. I use an Android phone.
I use something else. By the way,
you can find us on Pocket Casts.
Yeah, Pocket Casts, Podcoin, whatever. I'm just saying, if you want to leave a review, Stitcher can leave reviews, Apple Podcasts leave a review, probably somewhere else you could leave a review as well. But give us a review, and if you leave us a review, screenshot sent to us at MWCY on Twitter, and we'll give you a shout-out. So that sounds like a good plan. Please do it, hopefully. Not one star.
Fingers crossed.
All right, until next time, we'll talk in West Division football.